So glad to have Charmaine and Bob together on our panel. She's the founder and coordinator of Defenders of the Black Hills, an all-volunteer organization which won the International Nuclear Free Future Award in 2007 for resistance. She's a scientist, former college instructor, writer, and organizer. She speaks to the issue of nuclear waste from the beginning of the nuclear cycle at the place where the mining of uranium occurs. Charmaine comes from the center of the North American continent. The work of Defenders covers all of western South Dakota, parts of North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and Nebraska.
Tante washte na pe chuzapie. Zumila wabaga imachiapie. Oglava unchituka teto oyate ajete shakoi. First, I said, I greet each and every one of you with a handshake from my heart. And then I told you one of my names, my common name, is Zumila Wobaga. It means a little wise one who makes a mark. And then I said, I am from the Oglala band of the people who speak the Lakota language, the Lakota dialect, from the Great Sioux Nation, the Ochete Shakoi. And I'm very, very happy to be here today. I've come today in my traditional clothes, first to let you know that I am really actual Native American person. My grandmother's grandmother was at the Custer fight, where we live in the middle of the country. Is right behind the weatherman stands, you know. He stands there, South Dakota's right behind him. West Coast is over here, East Coast is over here. We're the forgotten area right behind here. And so I come here as a messenger, as a miner's canary, because what I'm going to tell you is something that most people don't know about. A little bit, just to tell you who we are. This first picture, and if you see the purple, and you'll notice Chicago is, whoops, is it working? Chicago is about right there, okay? This whole territory here, thank you, was the original territory of the Great Sioux Nation. It's huge. But the concept of territory with indigenous people is different than the Western European concept because there were many other nations who lived in there, who lived in this area too. Also, this whole area right here. Oh, so it has to die. There we go. That was the whole Great Sioux Nation once upon a time. And where I come from, oh, it did die, is almost right there. That's where I live in Rapid City. This is South Dakota, and this is North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming. Eventually, we made a treaty with the United States. We made a number of them, starting first with France in 1806. And then they kept coming forward until 1868, when my great-great-grandparents were alive. And the final territory that we made, final treaty we made, was the 1868, and that's in the darker colored right there, and where it says the Great Sioux Reservation. The Great Sioux Reservation is all of western South Dakota. But we were placed on prisoner of war camps within that so that when they discovered gold in the Black Hills. And this area that I'm going to be talking to you about is the Great Sioux Nation, the last treaty territory, this dark area right here, and including the Great Sioux Reservation. Oh, thank you. There we go. This darker area right here is the area I'm going to be talking about. This was the last treaty territory that we have with the United States. It's called the 1868 Treaty. It has never been abrogated. I mean, it has been abrogated, excuse me, by the United States, but it's not legally abrogated. And this is what we call America's secret Chernobyl. This is the area. This is the Standing Rock Reservation, Cheyenne River Reservation, Lower Brule Reservation, Crow Creek Reservation, Rosebud Reservation, and Pine Ridge Reservation. And this is the reservation that I come from. I grew up about right in the middle of there. This is South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming. Now, this map I received from the U.S. Forest Service a number of years ago, because all of these little yellow places right here, all of those are abandoned uranium mines or prospects. All of them are. This is just a short to show you where the Missouri River is, and it goes out and it comes out down here. The Standing Rock Reservation and where all these abandoned mines are right here, there's about, I know there's 89 for sure, abandoned open pit uranium mines. These travel down the Grand River and empty into the Missouri River right here. There are three villages along here. Two of them don't drink the water anymore, but the last village right here, where it empties into the Grand River, they still drink the water. There is a sign at one of the mines over here. There's only one mine that we have been able to get the Forest Service or anybody to talk about, and it's called the Riley Pass Mine. There is only one sign among all of these. And in this area that I'm talking about, there are 3,424 abandoned open pit uranium mines. This is what it says. The radiation levels in this area are elevated. No more than one day within a one-year period should be spent in this area. No camping. One sign. And the Forest Service put it up there after we complained and complained and complained, because you can drive right into those open pit mines. This is one of them. This is the Riley Pass mine. I've driven in there. This area where the Riley Pass mine is was at one time a very sacred place to not only the people of the Great Sioux Nation, but many others as well. And what this is the overburden. This is the waste. All of this. And look how it's very fragile soil, and so the water is so easily eroded. Some of the erosion ditches are from 8 to 10 feet deep. Here it is again. This is behind this area right here. Behind that is the Riley Pass mine. And this one is located in northwest corner of South Dakota. Right here, this whole area, this whole thing at one time was a sacred place to many nations besides the Great Sioux Nation people. How I got involved in this whole uranium business was when a DEIS came out from the Forest Service because they wanted to build some more oil wells near this place. But in order to build those oil wells, they needed to build some more catch ponds. I didn't know what a catch pond was then. And we got this invitation, I got the invitation for Defenders from the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer at Standing Rock Reservation, because there was a burial site right there. It's a burial site right there. And they wanted to build a catch pond near there. And the archaeologist with the Forest Service was trying to help all of us. And so I went there, and I got a copy of the DEIS, and that's when I first heard about these abandoned uranium mines. And it was the archaeologist who was explaining to us that this was the overburden, and it's all very radioactive. There's the overburden. Now, this is how high it should have been. And so you could see how much was pushed off so that they could get to the uranium. Here's our sacred site. Here's our burial site. When I went there to look at this burial site, we were walking around out there. And this is when I came across this, and I told the THPO and other people, I said, there is a sacred site there. And as we looked, there was another one right here beside it. And so we used to go up there every April, and we would have a prayer ceremony up there, but we would tell the young people not to come because the radiation levels are so high. Coming not only off of the wind coming over here, but also from all this overburden right here. These are cows. The area is managed by the Forest Service, and so they can lease this public land. And so cows, that's the sacred site that I was showing you in that other picture, just right off to the west, or south of it, is where these cows are at grazing, because the cattle ranchers there graze their animals in there. They drink the water. I don't know if I have a picture of that. Nope. They drink the water that's in those catch ponds, the cattle do, and the ranchers feed them copper sulfate to make sure that they have this color in their fur, and then they can sell the beef. Otherwise, they would have a grayish color. This area where Harding County, where all of this is located, has about 1,200 people. 25 of those people, the last I heard last spring, are diagnosed with brain tumors. 25 out of 1,200. That ratio is very, very high. And the only kind of brain tumors they get are those kinds that, from breathing in uranium. At this same area is a little elementary school. Now, I work with two professors. One is a nuclear health physics professor from the University of Michigan, Dr. Kierfoot. And the other one is Dr. Hannon Legary, who is the head of the science and math department for Oglala Lakota College, which is on our reservation. He has his PhD in geology, and she has her PhD in nuclear physics. She came a few years ago with some students. I was finally able to get a film company to come up and start looking at this, because what I'm telling you is it affects everybody, not just us. And that was partly why we won the Nuclear Free Future Award. People from Germany have come out to try to find out what's going on, people from Japan, but not from the United States. It keeps getting, the secrecy of it keeps getting blocked. She brought some students on a cultural exchange tour because she understands that we are from another nation, a third world nation right in the middle of the United States. And she also has been helping me with this for a number of years. When she brought her students, we were trying to get into the Riley Pass mine, but that day it was rainy and we couldn't get in there. You can drive in there, like I told you before, and we couldn't drive in there because it's just a dirt road, you know. And it gets washed out every now and then by the catch ponds when they overflow. So it was the road we couldn't get in. We came back and I told her, I said, right behind this school is a private abandoned open pit uranium mine. It's huge. And so she was going to take her students in there. But I told them, I warned them, I said, if you want to have children, you young people, don't go in there. The radiation levels are very high. But it was like I'd already showed her the one study that was done on the Riley Pass mine, and that said 1,400 microrems per hour. And she couldn't believe it. She thought that there had been an error or something. And so she let her students go up there with Dr. Legary, and they climbed over this edge of that mine, and they were taking readings as they were going down. They got to the bottom, not all the way to the bottom, when they hit 1170 microrems per hour. 1170 microrems per hour is four times as much as is coming out of Fukushima. Four times as much. This mine is only a quarter of a mile away from this elementary school. And this is in northwestern South Dakota. It's at a blink of an eye little place called Ludlow. You can look on the maps and you'll see Ludlow. And it's just north of Buffalo, South Dakota. Oh, my goodness sakes, I better hurry. This is the Cheyenne River Reservation. The Morrow River runs through the Cheyenne River Reservation. And again, there's four villages along this one. I haven't been able to test any of them, whether if they're drinking the water or what. This this is the Cheyenne River. Its headwaters are in Wyoming, around all of these abandoned uranium mines. There are 142 abandoned uranium mines right here on northwestern South Dakota. We are, again, involved in trying to stop another uranium mining company from coming in here. I've been real busy with that, otherwise I would have brought more information. The Pine Ridge Reservation is right here. Red Shirt Village happens to be in the aquifer system that is affected by this, plus along this river. The rest of the Pine Ridge Reservation is in a different aquifer system. I'm showing you just a little few pictures of Red Shirt Village. This is how it looks when you're entering the Pine Ridge Reservation at Red Shirt Village. The community member there right here, his name is Everett Porthunder, he asked me, could they use the river, the Cheyenne River, to water the community garden? And no, they couldn't. We did water tests on it. Not only did we do water tests, these boys jumped in there with the net to do biotic testing. There was the results for the biotic testing. Nope, there were 10 skipjack minnows and one crayfish. And we went walked down two different places. Their groundwater, the EPA has stopped them from using their groundwater for a few decades. And so they can't use their own pump house right there, and they can't use their groundwater because it's already too contaminated with radiation. This is in South Dakota, in the middle of the United States. That's just another well hole, the well holes, the wells, and that's their pump, and they can't use it. So they were asking, could they use the river? And no, I told them, no, you can't use the river to water your community garden. It's a very small community. All it has is a school, and this is the housing area. There's only about 100 people live in this little town. This is the Cheyenne River. On the pictures where it has my picture, there's a goofy picture in there. And this is the Cheyenne River behind me. Now, where the Cheyenne River gets its radiation from, part of it is from the abandoned uranium mines in southwestern South Dakota, in the southwestern portion of the Black Hills. This is called the Darrow Pits Uranium Mine, and back here, these are the Black Hills. The Darrow Pits Uranium Mine, if you were able to put them all together, and this is from a geologist, Professor Emeritus from the South Dakota School of Mines, would be about 1 square mile. So we have, this was drilled, this was dug in the late 50s, early 60s. None of these areas have been reclaimed because they were built before the reclamation period came out and because nobody knows about what is happening in the northern Great Plains. This is another catch pond, and these are from the Darrow Pits mine, and these are cattle drinking from the Darrow Pits abandoned uranium mine. In 1980, TVA said that the aquifers are polluted partly from the natural cracks, but also from the exploratory wells for uranium. In the 50s, there are more than 10,000 uranium exploratory wells in our area. The state of South Dakota, the state of Wyoming, still allows uranium mining companies to drill more uranium exploratory wells, even though they have this information that the aquifers are contaminated with uranium. We in the northern Great Plains, this is information from the Indian Health Service, we in the northern Great Plains have the highest rates of cancer in the country. These are just for the Indians because there's no studies done on the white people in our region. North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming. This is in the middle of the United States. This is not in Europe. This is not in Asia. This is right here in the middle of the United States.
1 minute.
There's yours truly. This is how I usually look, like a school teacher. But in order to get my point across, because I could also pass for a Mexican or Iranian or somebody else, I want to make sure people know what is happening. We have there was a group in Colorado who was trying to stop a uranium mine there, and they asked me, what can we do? And I said, give us a poster. And so they paid for this poster, no uranium mining in Great Sioux Nation territory. What will happen, or what is happening? We have the highest cancer rates, highest heart disease, diabetes, highest in the country. And if they would do studies, probably the highest miscarriage rates. Women have miscarriages. They don't have children that are born deformed. I'm the miner's canary. Come in here. You know what happens to the miner's canary? When the miner's canary goes down into those mines with the miners, it breathes in the poison and it dies. My people are dying from the radiation pollution from 3,242 abandoned open pit uranium mines. And not just from that. I have only come here today to talk about the abandoned mines and the waste and what is happening to us. There's more ways than that. that is happening to us. My action plan is a bill, and it's in your packet. If we are able to stop the mining of uranium at the beginning of the nuclear cycle, then we won't be able to have nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons. In your packet is a draft bill, a Uranium Exploration and Mining Accountability Act. We want the United States to clean up all these abandoned uranium mines. I've only talked about the ones that are in the middle of the United States, in the northern Great Plains. There's 1,300 of them in the southwest, where this young man comes from. There's probably more than that that we don't know because of the secrecy. But we need help. I asked the CDC to come out and do a study, and they said they wouldn't come because we have less than 1 million people in South Dakota. We asked the World Health Organization to come out and do a study. They never have, but then I found out that IAEA controls all the information that goes out from them, so it wouldn't matter anyway. But if this radioactive pollution is allowed to continue in the northern Great Plains region, and if new mining is allowed to continue, which all these states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, and Wyoming, are pro-uranium mining states. I can't go to the senators. I can't go to the congresspeople from those states and tell them this story. They know it, especially the ones from South Dakota. They said, but what about the tourists? If the tourists find out all this radiation is here, they won't want to come. It's a beautiful area. 25 miles from Mount Rushmore are 142 abandoned uranium mines and prospects. Our water has uranium in it. We have way more ways than just this mining that we are affected with radiation. But if we thought, if we could get this one bill passed, that would help. Because how are they going to clean up 3,242 abandoned uranium mines and put a moratorium on any more new mining until these mines are cleaned up? That's what this bill asks for. Put a moratorium on any more new mining until these mines are cleaned up. Because they're hurting the people, all the people. When that wind picks up that dust, it comes here to Chicago. It comes all across the United States. That water, the Missouri River, is contaminated from those abandoned mines. I've done the studies. I've done the water tests. We already know it's flowing into the Mississippi. The groundwater, yes, that's all contaminated too. There is also on that table, the second table over there, there is another piece over there. It's called America's Secret Chernobyl. That's what we call our region, America's Secret Chernobyl. I just looked up before I came at the Chernobyl Hotel. Their levels are 13 microrems per hour. I have just done random studies of our normal background where I in South Dakota. Our normal background goes from 13 to 15 microrems per hour. And that's why we call our region America's Secret Chernobyl. If you want to find out all the other ways that we are affected, pick up one of those yellow sheets back there because it's more than just the mining. I want to thank you all so much. My contact information is on that yellow sheet back there. And I want to thank you all so much for all this work that you do. If we're not able to stop these mines, it means certain genocide for my nation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We have 7 minutes for Q&A. Please come up to the microphone. One question per person. Keep it short.
Very short but quick. Where is that map of the abandoned mines? Where can we find that?
The map that I was showing is from the U.S. Forest Service, Custer National Forest in Montana.
Okay.
Patricia Axelrod, the Desert Storm Think Tank and All Veterans Advocate. Sir, gentlemen with a PSR, what about if I challenge you to sculpt and mold an epidemiological study, even if it's an informal one, if we could we could bring in some volunteer epidemiologists from Johns Hopkins? How about it, sir? Boots on the ground, we can go door to door, we can do an epidemiological study, just enough to get it off the ground. What do you think, sir? PSR?
We certainly need epidemiology, and the Academy of Sciences is currently looking at doing studies about the cancer effects around nuclear power plants. And I think epidemiology is very difficult to do well, and very expensive to do. So it's hard to organize just sort of a off-the-cuff study that's going to mean anything.
I recognize that, sir. You and I both know that NAS is fully in bed with the industry as a whole, sorry to say, as is the DOE. So while it is difficult to do, I would bet you if we did this together, we could pull down a grant and we could do this properly, sir. If I can get a grant, I was down to my last quarter. I was broke as a skunk, and I got a grant from the MacArthur Foundation. I bet you we could do it.
Thanks. I think maybe this is something you can discuss. It's a very important issue, depleted uranium. Next.
I'm wondering if Charmaine could talk to us about the famous Ogallala Aquifer and its comparison to what the nuclear problem is compared to the oil spill pipeline.
The pipeline. That's
whatever, yeah.
Yeah. The Ogallala Aquifer starts at the southern part of South Dakota, and so Pine Ridge Reservation is in that. It's a very deep aquifer. It goes all the way down to Texas. It's the largest aquifer in the United States. The coal sands that they are, the tar sands that they are getting the oil from in Canada and then going piping it through North Dakota on down through South Dakota also does go across the Ogallala Aquifer. It is coming across the eastern side of South Dakota. They plan on doing another pipeline that would come catacorner across from where I showed you the northwest corner of South Dakota, but they purposely skirted around the reservations because then we could pull the federal, a lot of federal laws into place, especially federal protection of sacred sites and burial sites. It will contaminate the Ogallala, which will have an effect on many, many states. Up where we are at, where all this nuclear pollution, the Madison Aquifer is the aquifer that we are concerned about. We drink the water. It's already polluted. The Madison also is the recharge for the Dakota Aquifer, which is on the eastern side of the state and goes into Minnesota and Iowa.
Stephen Schwartz, James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Study. Thank you for the powerful presentations this morning. It's known, but it bears repeating. A lot of people said after the end of the Cold War and continue to say today that nobody died during the Cold War. And it's true that we didn't kill anybody with our nuclear weapons, any Russians, and they didn't kill any Americans with their nuclear weapons. But we both ended up killing a lot of our own people and continue to kill and hurt a lot of our own people as a result of the production, testing, and deployment activities, and particularly the last presentation, I think, makes that very clear. I don't know the specific operating dates of the uranium mines in the area that you're talking about or exactly what they were for, but odds are, at some point, they were involved in mining uranium for the production of U.S. nuclear weapons. It's a short statement. I'm just saying that this is an important issue, and I'm glad you're bringing it to light, and I encourage you to keep doing it.
Okay, thank you. Question?
All of your stories are so touching. I have a quick question to Dr. Iverson. Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to read your book, so maybe you already told in your book, but I'm curious why you yourself worked at the Lockheed Fret, and you said you worked at the Lockheed Fret by yourself, right, in the facility institution, mm-hmm. and why did you?
Why did I go to work mm-hmm. at Lockheed Fret? That really is the point of writing the book, I guess, in a way, because the book is a story of my own sense of awakening in so many different ways. I went to work at the plant when I was a single parent with two children, putting myself through graduate school, And like many of the people in my community, the parents of my friends, they worked at Rocky Flats. Many of the kids that I grew up with went to work at Rocky Flats. And I go into detail on this in the book. And it was considered the best job in town. Our community was entirely dependent on Rocky Flats and Coors, oddly enough. You know, two things very briefly. Number one, I did not know what I was getting into. And it wasn't until that Nightline presentation that I even began to become a little bit aware of what was going on. And the other thing, too, I have to say in all perfect honesty, is I grew up with Rocky Flats. It was a great monolith of my childhood, the great secret, and the investigative journalism part of my soul. You know, I wanted to see what was going on. I wanted to see what it was like to work there, to get behind the walls and see what it was like. I had no idea I was putting myself in the kind of danger that I did, though. So the day that I saw that Nightline presentation that night, I knew that I would quit my job, and the day that I quit my job was the day that I knew I would write a book.
I want to give Bob Chavez the last word of our panel. Quick last word.
Yeah, I just want to, just quickly, I want to say that I have a magazine and a brochure, and if you need any background information on what exactly Los Alamos does, you could feel free to pull me aside afterwards or talk to me individually, and I'll be more than happy to discuss it with you. And we also have a comic book you could take a look at. This is the first copy so far, and it's to help, you know, educating the younger, sort of the younger end of the spectrum.